Malcolm Gladwell has a gift for taking a look at pervasive aspects of life and explaining them. He's written four bestsellers, The Tipping Point, Blink, Outliers, and What the Dog Saw. Malcolm Gladwell is a staff writer at The New Yorker. He describes himself on Twitter as a skinny Canadian.
I am that, yes.
His latest book is called David and Goliath, Underdogs, Misfits, and the Art of Battling Giants. It's about conflicts and how we often get them wrong, and it aspires to be a better guide to confronting giants. It's such a pleasure to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here.
You begin with the conflict of the title, the classic biblical tale of the shepherd boy David, who faced off against the giant Goliath and won the battle with one well-placed slingshot stone to the forehead. And you say the interpretation we have of this story is all wrong. Why is that?
Because it's been painted as this improbable victory, you know, this kind of one in a million outcome that never should have happened. And in fact, if you look at the story closely, David's victory makes perfect sense. First of all, he had the weapon that he chose, a sling. It's a devastating weapon. It's one of the most devastating weapons in the ancient world. I talked to this one ballistics expert who said he'd calculated that the stopping power of a stone thrown from a sling is the equivalent of a .45 caliber handgun. So David, once he chooses to use his sling, has the upper hand.
And you also parse the narrative to say that perhaps Goliath was not well. He mentions two sticks that this shepherd boy has, and he only has one stick. And you say one might infer that Goliath was not a well man.
Yeah, there's a lot of evidence. There's a really, really, really fun debate in the medical community among endocrinologists about whether Goliath has something called acromegaly, which is caused by a benign tumor on your pituitary gland, which would explain his height, because acromegaly is the overproduction of human growth hormone, right? It's giant, cause of giantism. But it also has a side effect in that it affects your vision. And Goliath behaves an awful lot like a guy who can't see much further than a couple feet in front of his face. That's why it takes him so long to react to David. That's the theory anyway. Mm-hmm. You can't see him, right? So here we have the blind giant up against the guy with this devastating weapon. Why do we call David the underdog?
This is the theme of the book. Yeah. It's like the idea that we really say things are David versus Goliath, meaning weak against strong, but we're often missing the strengths of David and missing the weaknesses of Goliath.
Exactly.
Knowing that that is the case in some circumstances, how does that make us more perceptive about discerning that?
Well, I think it's one of the central arguments of the book is that we need to do a better job of figuring out what an advantage is and what a disadvantage is. And there are lots of things that we think of as being entirely problematic that aren't, that where the story's more complicated. So I talk about, you know, something like dyslexia and point out that there are two outcomes with dyslexia. One is that it can be a severe handicap in helping people make the most out of their life. But separately, extraordinary numbers of very successful entrepreneurs and successful professionals have dyslexia. And if you ask them about their success, they will say, I am successful not in spite of my dyslexia, but because of it. That the presence of this kind of a problem with reading forced them to learn things they would never otherwise have learned that ended up being more important than being a good reader.
And you use the example of super lawyer David Boyce, who had dyslexia, and because he couldn't read those law books as well, he had an incredible memory, and he also had an incredible ability to pick up what people were saying and figure it out and parse people.
Yeah.
That's obviously really true, but you ask the very provocative question, you wouldn't want your child to be born with dyslexia, or would you?
Yeah.
And kind of implying that overall it could be a positive thing. But you also note in that section of the book that there's a high number of people in prison with dyslexia.
Oh, yeah. No, I ultimately say I answer that question by saying, no, of course you don't want your child to have dyslexia. But am I and should all of us as human beings be grateful that be grateful for the things that are learned by people who have suffered certain kinds of adversity? And the answer is, yeah. I make the comment in the book that an awful lot of what is beautiful and powerful in the world arises out of adversity. And we benefit from those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't wish them on each other, but nonetheless, as a society, there's a chapter about the guy who cures childhood leukemia, and he comes to that the idea of how to cure leukemia in part because of his own Dickensian childhood. You know, does he have that idea if he has a perfect childhood? I don't know. He doesn't think so. So it's an interesting question.
Yeah, I'm talking with Malcolm Gladwell. His new book is called David and Goliath. The subtitle of it is Underdogs, Misfits, and the Art of Battling Giants. Now, you've been criticized for some who say that you sort of cherry-pick the facts to fit your overarching theme. And in fact, in this example we've been talking about briefly, David Boyce, a critic wrote that said, well, you didn't take into account the fact that he also had high SAT scores. He had supportive parents, yeah. Even though he attributes dyslexia.
Oh, he didn't have high SAT scores, but that's a separate
matter. Well, yeah. But they say that there are other things that you weren't looking at that may have contributed.
No, there's no question. I mean, in that chapter, I make it absolutely clear. I am talking about a small minority of people who manage to have this advantageous reaction to dyslexia. I think what happens sometimes is that people miss the nuance. You know, this is quite a nuanced, subtle argument, and sometimes I think people caricature it, and that's unfortunate.
And you mentioned the idea that a horrible childhood actually can have some value in a person's life. And one of the things that I thought, one of the points I felt as though you were trying to make there was that you have to be somewhat indifferent to others in some ways. You have to be sort of not socially attuned to others and be willing to run roughshod over them in certain cases to be successful. And ordinarily, you'd think that people that didn't have social skills would be terrible as leaders. But in some cases, it's important.
No, it's interesting. This is this idea of disagreeableness that I spend a lot of time on in the book, that when you look at what are the characteristics that distinguish entrepreneurs? They have to be creative. They have to be hardworking. But then I talk about this notion of disagreeableness, which is not obnoxiousness, but rather how much do you need and rely on the social approval of your peers? And someone who's doing something really revolutionary cannot be someone who requires that kind of social support. Because much of what you do when you are when you're a revolutionary is considered to be ridiculous or wrong or stupid by the majority. Mm-hmm. You've got to be the kind of person who doesn't care about that. And that's that in that same chapter about the guy who cures leukemia, that's really what I'm getting at, is that he's a very difficult man, but we benefit from his difficulty. That's what's sort of fascinating.
You know, as I was reading that part of your book, I was also reading something from a forthcoming biography about Amazon.com and Jeff Bezos, and it talked about how harsh and mean and critical he can be in criticizing employees like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were. I was wondering if that's sort of imperviousness to social cues and not really caring how other people feel carries over to success in business.
Oh, I think it absolutely does. I mean, you know, we have to be careful once again that we're not saying that that everyone has to be this way, and we're not saying it's a good thing to be a jerk. What we're simply saying, your Bezos example, I think, is a really wonderful one. We're saying, look, there are certain kinds of very difficult tasks in the world of business or the world of science that are only possible by if you've got a really, really thick skin. Bezos has got a thick skin. I mean, people have been calling him crazy for a very, very long time, and it has not slowed him down or bothered him. And, you know, if I was Jeff Bezos, I'd have given up a long time ago. I'm a little more susceptible to what critics have to say.
You're a terrific storyteller in your books. Many chapters contain these individual stories nested within other stories combined with research, and it's a really powerful mix. But I was delighted to see, as a writer, you recently spoke in awe about another writer who covers some of the same area, and I'm talking about Michael Lewis, who makes large points about sports and race and the economy simply by storytelling. Part of the reason you expressed amazement at him is the fact that he doesn't do that much research on
it. Oh, he's better than I am. Way better. I mean, I think he is the... I've often said that Michael is the one who will be reading 50 years from now. I mean, it's funny, you know, there are certain things that you can only see if you're an insider. So you know, filmmakers have an appreciation for other filmmakers that someone like me doesn't. Well, as a writer, I can tell you that what he does is so insanely difficult that I could never pull it off. Those single narratives where he goes into such extraordinary detail and depth and nuance about people without ever kind of leaving that one story. It's incredible. Really incredible.
And he's conveying serious messages. The book about the economic collapse told entirely through a few people who'd figured out the housing crisis was coming.
It was a best-selling, thrilling book about derivatives. The day I can pull that off, I will be very happy.
Do you have a next book in mind already?
No, it's too soon.
Yeah.
I have to recover.
Malcolm Gladwell, thank you so much for stopping by. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Real pleasure.